Okay, I've been asked to start on time, so I'm going to try and do that. Okay, so I'm now actually recording this twice, which I will now remember. If you're interested in the slides, which you don't know if you're interested yet or not, because you don't know if they're any good, but if you're interested in them, the QR code will take you there, but also icga.live/ATT2024 will also take you there. It's the same thing, so whichever way is easier for you. And I am going to start us off with a Dvar Torah.
Shalom. As we gather today at the crossroads of tradition and innovation, I am reminded of the timeless wisdom of the Torah and how it continues to guide us through the ever-evolving landscape of human knowledge and technology. Today, I wish to explore the intersection of Torah values in the burgeoning field of artificial intelligence, particularly its application in the sacred task of education. In the book of Mishlei, Shlomo teaches us, educate a child according to his way. This verse encapsulates the divine wisdom in recognizing and nurturing the unique potential within each student. In the context of AI, this ancient advice takes on a new dimension. AI, with its capacity for personalization, offers us unprecedented tools to tailor education to the individual needs, abilities, and learning styles of each student, truly embodying the essence of King Solomon's words. The relationship between teacher and student is sacred, a bond that transcends the mere transmission of knowledge. As we integrate AI into our classrooms, let us not forget that technology serves as a tool to enhance, not replace, personal human connection that lies at the heart of education. In conclusion, let us embrace the tools of AI with wisdom and discernment, using them to illuminate the path of Torah and to nurture the divine spark within each of our students.
Okay, so hopefully, at least those of you who know me know that I don't really talk like that. But it sounded like me, right? I mean, the intonation, yes? And the video, right? So a few of you were maybe wondering for a moment or two, except that you know me well enough to know that, like, yeah, no, I wouldn't do that. The text was written entirely by ChatGPT with very little. I edited it mostly for brevity rather than for style or anything like that. And in fact, the original was, in my opinion, better. It had, like, it quoted the sources in Hebrew also and did a few other things. But I wanted to start with this because I wanted to demonstrate, for those of you who were with us last year, just how dramatically, even in this 1 year, AI has developed. Last year, I put up a video of, like, some caricature of a rabbi speaking, and, like, his beard didn't move while his mouth was moving, and various other things. And this, for someone who doesn't know me, if they saw this, they'd have no reason to think this wasn't me, right? And the truth is, if I had spent a little bit more time on refining the script, even people who know me wouldn't necessarily have been able to tell. And so we need to realize that just because you see something does no longer make it true. But also to consider the fact that there's now some real powerful tools in terms of creating interaction with our students that can do some really amazing things. So it can be scary, and, you know, whatever, but the Dvar Torah that was produced here, I'll tell you, I would put my name on the Dvar Torah itself, like, really, like, be pleased to do so. Okay. So let's move on. So here's what I'm going to cover in this first hour session, God willing. I will not run out of time. and we'll have lots of opportunities. Okay, so first I'm just going to spend a few minutes reviewing some basics about AI, just catching everybody up on where we are, talk about what kinds of output AI is producing these days, and then I'd like to spend the bulk of this session talking about practical ideas, ways that you can use AI outside of the classroom without interacting with students that will help you, save you time, help you prepare and be better ready, be able to do all sorts of things in easier fashion with AI. That's what we're going to do this first hour, God willing. Okay, so first the basics. So when we talk about computers, I'm going to simplify here just so the couple of technical people in the room just like nod your heads, okay? So when we talk about computers, there's three basic kinds of computer programs, if you will. There's classical computer programming, where everything is very robotic. It does A, it does B, it does C, right? There is what's called machine learning, which many of you are familiar with. We've used it. You use it in lots of different places where it's, so for example, facial recognition, optical character recognition, where it's, you know, where it can scan a sheet and read the words that you've written. That's all based on machine learning. Machine learning is where the computer is given a huge data set and it sort of knows the parameters, like an A looks something between this and this. That's an A. And it's got a bunch of different examples, and so it can sort of figure out things that are in the middle of it, right? That's machine learning. And what we've been confronting over the last year and a half or so, at least for us normal folk, the non-professionals, is generative AI or large language models, and they are really different. And what I'm going to skip ahead for just a moment. The way that they're different has to do with accuracy and what the world has been calling hallucinations. Right? Large language models are designed purposefully and importantly to be imprecise. And it is their gift. It is the way, it is their power. And it is why we will likely never entirely get rid of that from this kind of generative AI, because we want it to do it. Because otherwise it would just be spitting back what it already knew. It would be spitting back exact duplicates. That's not what we want when we want something to create something new. Right? If we want someone to have imagination, that means that they can lie. Like, those two things go together. So we can limit it, we can test for it, and certainly that's something that all of the people who are working in AI are certainly working on, but it's not something that is going away anytime soon, and it's not something we really want to get rid of entirely. There are ways to limit it and to check for it in various ways. One of the things that a number of AIs are doing these days is giving you the opportunity to ask for citations. So when you do a web search with AI these days, it will often give you links to the sites that it's, and that's a way of sort of checking it. But nothing is going to make it go away entirely. And you just need to know that. And so a human being needs to look at whatever you're creating. Okay, now I'll go back up to parts of an AI. It is important to distinguish between the interface with which you're interacting with the AI and the AI itself. So, for example, OpenAI is a company. They create a product called GPT. GPT is a large language model. That large language model can be interacted with in a number of different ways. One of the ways, the most popular perhaps, is ChatGPT. That ChatGPT is an interface to that AI. But there are other interfaces that allow you to interact with it as well. And in fact, in the second session, I'll talk more about some of the specific places and ways that you can do that. And if you're technical, there are lots of different reasons why you might want to use different ones, because they give you different access to some of the underlying pieces of the model. But so it's important to keep that in mind and understand that just because you're using an AI in three different places doesn't necessarily mean that you're using three different AIs. So, for example, I'll jump ahead here a little bit. The Meta AI, the Facebook AI, is available in a number of different places. It's available, for example, on most of your phones in WhatsApp. It's available on Facebook, and it's available in lots of different places. And it's the same AI, and with more or less the same parameters. Okay. Next, prompting. Prompting is not going away anytime soon. But it is changing. How you prompt is changing. It has already changed. One of the things that's happening is that as AIs get better at understanding language, you can use the AI to help you write the prompt. So whereas historically, which is to say 6 months ago, a year ago, you had to write this long prompt, today you can write a really short prompt and have the AI write the longer, more detailed prompt. And that can be really dramatic when it comes to creating images. Later I'll demonstrate perhaps how to do images in with DALL-E using the ChatGPT interface, where with just a few words I can get some really beautiful results and modify them just talking to the AI. And so I don't have to be quite as precise as I might have to be if I was writing the prompt myself. We'll see going forward. We're going to see over the course of the next, month, 2 months, we'll see less and less requirement for detailed prompting, but more opportunity to refine and to use it in more precise ways. We'll be able to speak more naturally. Also, AI is going to get more and more built into everything. It is already becoming ubiquitous. I don't know who thought that putting AI...
There's a Honda Civic in the parking lot with the motor on. License plate DM57212. There's a Honda Civic with the motor on. Illinois license plate DM57212. Thank you.
I don't know who decided that putting an AI into WhatsApp was useful, but it's there. So it's everywhere. It's everywhere now. So now let's just talk about what kinds of different output are available in AI. So obviously text is available. The most famous versions of text generators are GPT, Meta, Bard, which is now Gemini. They just rebranded it and released an update. It's much more powerful now. Image generation, DALL-E, again Meta, Firefly, Midjourney are some of the most well-known. Speech generators. So for example, the speech that the Dvar Torah that I gave at the beginning, the sound from that was produced by giving it a 30-second sample of me talking randomly, right? Just like, and I had nothing to say. So I was like, if anyone ever hears that 30-second, I'll be embarrassed because, like, I was lost. I didn't know what to say. So I spoke for 30 seconds randomly and then gave it a text chat, and it produced that sound. So speech generators... Music generators, I'm going to show you this because it's just too much fun not to. Presentation generators, so like slides. You know, give it a topic and it will produce a whole slideshow, and we will definitely take a look at that. Video generation is the new, state-of-the-art place. If you have not seen the Sora... demo. Sora is the new video generator from OpenAI, from the same people who brought ChatGPT. It is they haven't released it yet. They've just released a demo. They're doing some testing to make sure that it's safe, is what they've said. But they've released some demos that are dramatically powerful, like beyond anything that's out there right now, and like just wild. But even the things that are out there are very powerful already, and I'll show you just one or two of those really quickly. So creating video And then there's others that we're not going to be able to talk about at all here, creating code, creating 3D models, doing various actions, interacting with your computer in various ways, all of those things. So if you're wondering how to keep track of all of those, there used to be this thing called, like, there's an app for that. Now there's an AI for that. And there's a website called There's an AI for That 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 indexes huge numbers of AIs. So if you're looking for an AI to do a particular task, it's a good place to go and look. And that's right there. But first, I have to show you this. It's just too much fun. So I gave it this prompt, fun Jewish blues song about Torah. And let's see if I can actually get it to show me what I want it to show me, right? Fun blues Jewish song about Torah. So that took me about 30 seconds, right? Like, I typed in those words. That was all I had to do. And it produced the words, the music, and gave me that sample. Yes, sir?
Who has the copyright on that? Like,
that's a really interesting question. For all of these things, it's not entirely clear. The court cases have not yet. Probably nobody. But and not entirely clear. And by the way, even at whatever point it becomes clear doesn't mean it won't change. This is clear. I mean, not a lawyer, right? Not an expert, but it's from my understanding, it's really not clear who has the copyright, if there's a copyright at all. Theoretically, as the amount of effort goes up, the claim on copyright goes up. So, as these things get easier, it becomes, right? But also, I mean, the flip side is, like, why should anyone have the copyright to that? That took me 30 seconds to produce, right? Like, why should I have the copyright to that? And certainly nobody else should have it, right? So, like, why? And why do I care? If I'm going to use this for my class, because, like, you know, and let's say I edited the words, whatever, and, you know, and I'm going to use it, like, you know, for some fun moment in my class, like, why do I care if someone else somewhere can use it too? Like,
somebody,
you know,
puts it on Spotify.
Yeah, who cares? So they'll make money off it, you know? I mean, if I'm smart enough to do it, I could too, yeah? Yeah.
That kind of makes me think of kind of like image. Like, if you were trying to send a message to students about something you're teaching with an image and likeness of another person, what is that like, personally?
Yeah, so if it's just a sort of generic person, it's really easy. I'll show you later. If it's a real person, it becomes more difficult. Not really from a technical perspective. Most of the places, like the one that I use to create the video of myself, first you video yourself for 2 minutes talking, also silly and generic, but and then before it will actually give you access to the model, you have to record a video of that person giving permission. So now that's not like, I mean, that doesn't mean that someone else doesn't have the same technical power without that control, right? Like without that ethical piece in there. And, you know, certainly it seems from the world out there that there are people out there who have the ability to do this without that. So certainly would not assume that a video of you talking is actually you talking, right?
That's what I was going to ask. What about, like, identity theft and
yeah.
voice recognition?
Yeah, yep, yeah. It's all, right, all of those things. Voice recognition is probably, I mean, I don't really know, like, exactly how accurate this looks underneath, like, if you were using a computer to check. But even if it's not perfectly accurate now, it will be soon. So, like, those are no longer really valuable methods of
voice recognition.
Yeah, right. Right. That's right. Right. Those things are dated. Yeah. Yes, sir.
So the recent Hass concert, they had a hologram of Shlomo Carlebach singing and harmonizing with the singer, and it actually looked like he was singing on stage. So I'm just thinking about Neshama Carlebach. Did they like contact her and say, you know, we're doing this, we're bringing your father up from the, you know?
Yeah, no, it's a serious issue. Right. It's a serious question. Who has the right? I mean, and who has the rights to that? Right, like that's right. And I mean, it's not. And these are matters of law that have been debated to some degree already in terms of, you know, the likeness of a person, right? Like, if you want to put a picture of somebody on a t-shirt and sell it. So that's something that's been, you know, fought out in the courts already. So, you know, this is something that's going to change over time. There's no question. Yeah.
And where does this take us? Creativity with our students, like.
So here's my take on that, which is that, she asked where this leaves us in terms of creativity with our students. So, you know, I play with Lego. Now, the thing about Lego, there's some very interesting pieces about this, which is that, like, you've got very specific pieces, and there are rules for how those go together. Now, when I try to create something, like if anyone wants to see it during the break, there's a pretty large scale model of the Kotel that I built that I'm pretty proud of. There are pieces that I needed to get in order to do it because. And having additional pieces with additional colors gave me additional possibilities. So this is a new tool. And it means that in the same way that I can't draw, I cannot draw. I have a good eye. So computers gave me the possibility to be artistic in a way that I could never have been artistic if all I had was a pen and paper. Because I can't hold my hand steady enough to draw. Right? So these are new tools. And just like a person can use a pen and paper or a computer to do things that are copying someone else, to plagiarize, you can use these tools to be non-creative, right? But you can also use these tools to be creative, right? So, and I'll give you some examples of that as we go on, but I want to move on because I want to make sure we get to the meat of this. Okay. All right. All right. So some practical ideas. First, organization. For those of you who have been teaching for a while, you have lots of stuff. Right? Now, for those of you who have really been teaching for a while, you have lots of boxes. Now, let me tell you, I used to have lots of boxes because I've been teaching for a long time. And a few years back, I made an investment of a summer, and I spent the summer digitizing all of my boxes. I gained a room in my house. It's now filled with other stuff, by the way, so it was a short-term gain. But I gained a room in my house. But it also meant that everything I ever taught, I now have instantly accessible on my Google Drive. It's all there. Now, that means that I need to have it organized in some fashion that's useful, right? Not anymore. Because now I can give all of that stuff to an AI and say, find the thing that I need, right? So if you have a bunch of stuff online, a bunch of photos, right, a bunch of whatever, you can now, Dropbox has an AI that you can just hand all your stuff to and say, okay, learn where everything is. You know, I need to find that email that I sent to John about that thing. And, you know, it'll find it for you. All right? I couldn't find it for you, but it can. How many of you have done a Google image search recently? Right? It's a wild thing. The truth is Google image search is probably more machine learning than generative AI, but it's still a really powerful thing. And one of the things that it demonstrates is the way in which imprecision is important. So let me just sort of show you two quick examples. If you do a Google image search on this photo, you'll wind up finding where you can buy that sweater. And that's because it's matching the pattern, but it's not the same picture, right? Similarly, if you do a Google search on this photo, you'll find a number of synagogues and other buildings, but one of them is Kin's, which means to say you need to be really careful about what you put online because people will be able to find it, right? But it's also really powerful because it's not looking for exact matches. It means it will find the thing. So, very likely. The last time, if you have a picture of somebody and you don't know who they are, you're not sure. If they are at all internet famous, even a little bit, right, which encompasses pretty much every rabbi beyond, like us teachers, right, you will find them online and you will find out who they are. Not a problem, right? Even if they're fairly old, like pre-internet, you'll still, because there are pictures of them that have been uploaded, right? Not a problem. Note-taking. I hate note-taking. For the last number of years, I've been very lucky. I have a person whose name I won't mention who types faster than any human being can speak, and anytime I'm in a meeting, that person takes notes. And if they had done nothing else for me for the last 10 years, for that alone, I would owe them the world. They've done lots of other stuff, but for that alone. But thankfully, because I don't know that I'll be able to rely on them forever, thankfully, the need for that is quickly disappearing. I ran a meeting where this person wasn't able to attend. I ran a meeting, an hour-long meeting, on Zoom on Friday, and I had an AI take notes. So the AI was a member of the Zoom and recorded the Zoom, no other input, just recorded the Zoom and took notes. First it creates a transcript, and then it organizes it by topic and gives you notes. And you have multiple formats for how you want it. So this was by topic. These are chronological. Now, you guys don't know this meeting, so you don't, I'm not sure how meaningful this is to you. I am recording this class right now. At the end of the class, I'm going to upload the stuff, and we'll see if the notes are any good, We'll decide.
What guys do you use for that? What is the note taker?
So there's different ones. This was done with, let's see if I can remember, most of the note taker apps assume that you're on a online meeting. That wasn't helpful for us. At the end, when I go to upload the notes, remind me and I'll tell you which one that.
Notebook
LM? No. I'll show you. I'll show you at the end when I upload the notes. It starts with an F.
It's part of the Zoom.
It joins the Zoom. Did I just unplug myself? Okay. It joins the Zoom, but the one I'm using right now for this meeting obviously isn't joining a Zoom. Although I thought about doing it that way, it's just recording on my phone, and
it
will upload.
Like, YouTube. Any YouTube,
right. You can do the same thing with a YouTube video, right? I mean, there are a bunch of different note-taking apps that, you can give it a video or a sound recording, and it will automatically create notes from it. I know Marcia's already thinking about some of her students who need help taking notes, which is great. But regardless, whenever you need to take notes, if it's using even a little bit of your brain while you're in the meeting, you don't need to be doing that anymore. Yes?
Really quick. So if I'm giving a lecture in a class that the kids want notes for... Okay, you know what I mean.
Absolutely.
The biggest complaint of my students is they can't listen to me and write at the time.
Right. So this is related to that question, which is, we have to decide as teachers which things we need our students to learn to do and to what degree we're going to scaffold them and to what degree we're going to do things for them. And that's a really big question. And it may be different for different students. It's certainly different for different age groups, right? And it's not any different, by the way, than the conversation that many of us have had over the years with, like, when do we let students use a translation for a text versus requiring them to use the original text? It's the same conversation. And the answer is nuanced. So, yes, if there's a student who can't take notes, right? So I now have a much better answer than I've had before. Previously, I had some reasonably good answers, but this is a much better answer than anything I've had before. And it's even more powerful because if you want to teach them to be able to multitask even a little bit, there are ways of doing it so that, like, they can press a button when the person's saying something important, and that'll highlight that and create, like, a separate clip of that. So there are some things that they can do that you can sort of have them do to also require them to have some interaction with the notes. But yeah, for a student who's really not capable of doing it, and we feel comfortable that it's not something we need to teach them for whatever reason, then yeah, absolutely, this is a really good solution.
Will it listen to me while I talk?
Yeah, it will record you while you talk, and then at the end it will create a transcript, and then from the transcript we'll create notes. Yeah. Yes.
So, like, if we're using Hebrew and speaking in Hebrew?
Yeah, even with Hebrew. Yeah. I'm going to talk about Hebrew in a minute, because on the next slide, I think, we're going to talk about that. Yeah. Note-taking. And by the way, ask me a different time when my brain's not entirely in AI. If you have students who need help taking notes, but you want them to do some note-taking, there are some good examples. There are some good tech solutions that scaffold without taking the job entirely away from them. And so there's some really powerful tools like that. Yeah?
So if you're giving a lecture in Hebrew...
Yeah, it does Hebrew just fine.
Have it in English.
Oh.
What's a good model to have it changed?
Oh, yeah. ChatGPT translates Hebrew just fine.
Yeah. Google is horrible.
ChatGPT does a really beautiful job.
Google doesn't.
Yes. In fact, I had ChatGPT for a while talking to me in biblical Hebrew. I told it, like, respond to me in the style of the Bible, and yeah, it does just fine. Yeah. Much better than it used to. But really nicely. Problem is that I don't really speak biblical Hebrew, but you know, hey. Moving on. Custom daily newspapers. If you're a person who, like, tries to read a lot of stuff, on whatever topic, part of the problem is just finding all that stuff and going through it and scanning it, see which pieces are interesting to you. So there's one of the things that's happening now is that more and more tools are learning to interact with AI. So you can now use AI in connection with other things to produce things that are far more refined than you could before. So there are two websites out there that are famous for allowing you to sort of create kind of like your custom programs that will do some things. Zapier and I don't know how to pronounce that, but it's like if that, then this, IFTTT, right? Those are two websites that do that. They now give you hooks to AI. So, for example, in Zapier, you can take an RSS feed, right, which is basically a website, right? Take the data from a website. Anytime there's a new article, you can throw that, you can hand that article to ChatGPT, have ChatGPT summarize it, have ChatGPT decide if it's an article you'd be interested in based on whatever you've taught it, and then if it's interesting to you, have it put it into your daily newsletter that gets delivered to you at 6 in the morning or whenever you decide, or your weekly newsletter, right? And there you go. So instead of, like, spending hours combing the web for new articles about model trains, you can just wait for the four interesting articles to appear summarized in your email.
And some sites will have AI read it to you.
Yeah, right. And you can have AI read it to you too, right? But I don't know. I'm old school. I prefer reading to listening. But you do you. Okay. Yeah.
Kelly, how can it be used if you're doing genealogical research? You know, can you give a name of somebody who lived 200 years ago? Can it find?
If you have the database of records, you can use AI to search through the database of records more effectively than you might with a standard. In the olden days, we had to be sure that, like, we gave it different spellings. And now the AI can sort of figure that stuff out. So those are the kinds of things that it might be helpful there. But what I suspect is that if it isn't there already, the website that is giving you the database for genealogical research is going to add, if it hasn't already, it's going to add an AI to their search tool. It's going to happen automatically. Writing letters to whoever, especially if you're not sure exactly what to say, but you want it to sound personal. I'll give you just a couple of examples. My Hebrew is reasonably good, and the Hebrew teachers here will attest to that for me, I think. A few of them are in the room. But don't all jump up at once. It's especially true when I'm face-to-face. But in October, I found myself in a situation that probably many of us faced, which is I have relatives in Israel who really speak Hebrew, who I speak to in Hebrew, who I wanted to write to. I haven't spoken to in a while because, you know, things happen and we just haven't talked. And I felt like I needed to write them, but I didn't feel like my Hebrew was up to the challenge. And I really didn't know what to do. And I went to ChatGPT and I said, I need to write a letter to my relatives I haven't spoken to in a long time. I want to check in and see how they're doing. Give me 3 examples in Hebrew. And it did. And then my Hebrew is good enough. Now, I wouldn't have sent one of those. Let's be clear, right? I wouldn't have sent one of those sight unseen. And if my Hebrew wasn't good, right, if my Hebrew wasn't reasonably good, I'm not sure I would have been comfortable sending one of them, right? But in the moment of, like, blank, it was a great starting point, right? A lot of what the AIs will do for us is give us really good starting points. So I took those 3, and from those 3, I crafted one that I was comfortable with, and I sent it. Right, and it saved me a tremendous amount of pain and anguish, and a tremendous amount of time. And that's really my message for you: is that this isn't necessarily going to do it from the beginning to the end, but the rough draft it gives you is going to save you hours. Right. So if you want to write an email at the beginning of the year to all your students or to the parents of your students, and you want each one to be a little bit different, if you give the AI a couple of facts, it will give you, you know, here's the same email written 5 different ways based on your notes. You hook that together with a mail merge program, and you've now sent, you know, individualized emails, and it took you no more time than it would have taken you to send the same form email to all 5 people, right? Takes you the same amount of time that it would have sent, right? And now it comes off a little bit more personal.
Can you just teach it to do laundry and make dinner?
You can. Yeah, okay. All right. So now we'll talk about some creation stuff, some things you can create, sort of in a general, not school specific. First of all, if anybody whose native language is English is typing Hebrew, you're wasting your time. And if anyone whose native language is Hebrew and you're typing English, you're wasting your time. Your computers now type really well. They're using AI to understand language and type for you. I don't know. I told one of them. For years, the Hebrew teachers here at the academy would email me in Hebrew because they know my Hebrew's good enough, which is fine. And at the very beginning of it all, I felt obligated to answer them in Hebrew. But my typing skills in Hebrew are non-existent, and if I was writing anything vaguely complicated, it took me forever. So And way back when, I tried using Google Translate and whatever to type for me in Hebrew. Not really. So I started answering them in English. This year, I discovered I no longer have to do that. Because all I have to do, because my Hebrew speaking is fine, all I have to do is turn on the dictation on my computer and dictate the email in Hebrew, and it will type it just fine for me. Right? So if you're typing in a non-native language that you don't touch type in, you are wasting your time. And even if it doesn't do it perfectly, it's doing it well enough that it's better than anything you would have done touch typing, the like cut and pack. Not only that, for anyone who's looking for Nikud for Hebrew, if you hand the Hebrew to ChatGPT and ask it to add vowels, it will do a wonderful job. Right. And those are just, you know. Now, the next thing on here, writer.me, is a site where you can give it samples of your work, and it will learn your style. So, like, going back to that video of me talking, if I wanted that video to actually have sounded like my speech patterns, if I had given it some of my, some transcripts of things that I had actually said, I could teach it my voice, and then that video would have been even more convincing. But I wanted you to see that it wasn't real, right? But this is particularly handy if you're, you know, someone who writes a lot and you want to use ChatGPT or you want to use an AI to give you your rough draft, but you don't want to lose your voice. You don't want to lose. If you give this AI a bunch of your writing, it will give you rough drafts that sound like you. And you can even tell it, you know, sound like me casually, sound like me formally, sound like me writing an email, sound like me writing a paper, and lots of different. So for those of you who are doing any kind of writing and want rough drafts, for those of you who are doing, who create images for your classroom and want things that are, that look like they're all done by the same person, perhaps. You know, the problem used to be you could give AI a prompt and it would give you, you know, three different images that didn't look at all alike. But that's no longer true. You can create images that look like they're from the same person. So you can create a whole body of work that works together. Right? So if I'm creating images to use in my classroom, I can pick one of them as the style guide for the others, and then create a body of, and these images were created with, like, you know, a single sentence prompt. Like, you know, the penguin was a sample, right? Create a cute penguin wearing glasses with a plain blue background. So I created the penguin, and then I uploaded the penguin as a style guide and said, okay, create a zebra, create a lion. Right? And I could have gone on, but I thought that was enough for the, right? So, I'll try to show you. Let's see. So there are a couple of different ways of doing this. I'm going to just show you one really quickly. So Firefly is Adobe's, generative, image AI. So it has a lot of samples here, right? So we're going to try this prompt. Okay. So let's go with this one, right? So I'm going to download this image, and then I'm going to Then I'm going to take this image from here, and I'm always easier when no one's watching. Right? I'm gonna upload it right here to the stop. Right, let's try that one more time, shall we? There. I'm going to upload it right here to the style image thing. And now I'm going to say, let's try, I'm going to change this prompt to a red bird on brain ponds. And generate. And I have a photo that matches in style. And I can keep doing that so that I get a whole series of consistent work just by uploading a style reference. So, like, I can get cute little pictures to use in my classroom. And you see how long that took, right? No, we're going there. All right. Any questions? Yes.
Have you found that, like, let's say you did that bird one, and you want to make a little saying on it?
Yeah, so, okay, text in image generation is complicated. It's one of the sort of the edges. There's a couple of generators that do it better than others. At this point, I would say, generally speaking, the best way to do it is to add the text later, right? Right, so like, but it depends which image generator you're using. Some of them actually do it well. You can certainly test it. It takes 5 seconds. And they're all working on getting better.
I feel like this has an application for, like, publishing our literary.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So some things to think about in terms of that. Right down here, you can use the image generator to create images of a character in a book, for example. Here, I'll show you. I won't do it live. I'll just show you the one I have, if I can find it. Yeah. So I took, and I haven't read it recently, you'll forgive me, but I searched for the text that describes Frankenstein's monster in the text, and I pasted it into the Meta AI. So right here you'll see his limbs were in proportion and I had selected his features. All of that, I didn't write that. I just copied and pasted that, and this is what it created as the image. And it's interesting to try different AIs with the same text and see where they come out with. See if I can find. I did this. This is what ChatGPT did with the same text, right? And Firefly really did poorly. It created. I didn't even save it. Okay.
With a comic, so I have to give him a script.
And yeah.
Give the comics.
I'm not sure. Oh, you like to get it to speak?
No, just comics.
Yeah, like multiple panels.
Oh yeah. So if you do something to keep the same style, you can get it to do multiple poses over time that are consistent. That's exactly right. And then you can add your text and create a comic. That's right. All right. But if you're trying to get students to imagine what somebody in the book looks like, you know, if you, you know, you can have them, like, okay, search for all the descriptive words and see, and then have them draw one and then compare it and ask them which one they like better and why, right? There's your creative piece, right? Like there's lots of ways to do that. You can use it to summarize ideas. And to illustrate ideas, and to chart. So let's see if I have this open here somewhere already. I think I do. So I gave it... I gave it a text in Hebrew. It's a Mishnah. This is Klal Amru B'Maisrot, and then I asked it to graph it, and it produced this. And you can edit this. So if it... I'm sorry?
It's a mind map? That's
yeah.
How did you do that?
That's in ChatGPT. There are plugins that allow you to create. So I just gave it the Hebrew. I gave it the Hebrew text, the original Hebrew text. It's translated, summarized, organized, and then created a chart. And the chart is editable. So if I want to, if I think there's something wrong about the chart, I can edit the chart. So if I'm creating charts for my class, right? I'm it's not doing 100%, but 75, 50%, even if it's only doing 50%, it takes 30 seconds. Stick the text in there, have it create the chart for you. Right? And there are a lot of different tools that create different kinds of charts. So by all means, you know, invest the one day to figure out which charts you like better. So, you know, and what you need to tell it to get the charts you like, and then save yourself hours and hours of work.
You said that was from ChatGPT?
Yeah. But there are other places, too. I'm going to show you some others, too.
Are all these tools free of charge?
Ah, excellent question. So some of the tools are not, and some of the tools are. So I'm really going to spend some time in the next class talking about, I'm going to show you some ChatGPT has certain things that are free and certain things that are not. It's not particularly expensive if you're using it. And even, by the way, you know, as a teacher, you can pay monthly. So during the summer when you're planning your... So pay $20 for a month and do all of your charts for the year. And then, you know, right? Like, I mean, think about all the money you anyway spent, right? So, yeah. Right, like, we're all spending our own money anyway. So, but there are other sites that are free. I'm going to get to some of those in a minute. At least I hope I am. How am I doing on time here? Oh, not so well. Okay. All right, so we're going to skip that. Hey Jen and 11's Lab are the tools that I used to create that video at the beginning. Let's get to some of the stuff that's more specific to schools. And even free. So these tools, all four of these have free tiers that produce some decent stuff. DFIT produces resources around text, specifically text-based. So if you want to change the reading level of the text, want to translate the text or leave it in the same. It has a bunch of worksheets that it will create automatically based on a text that you give it. You can give it a Hebrew text, an Aramaic text, an English text. Doesn't care. It does them all. Magic School, there are gobs and gobs of, and I'm going to go there because I'm going to show you some of the stuff that I've done here, and it saves.
All this on your handout, like you said. That was
yes, all of these links are on my handout.
Could you remind us the location of that handout?
Yeah, I will. Yeah.
You could bring up the.
Yeah, give me a second, and I'll bring that up. So here I gave it a Hebrew text, the first Mishnah in Brachos, and I told it, give it to me at a first grade level, and this is what it gave me. So it translated it and summarized it in a way that was accessible to first graders. Here I gave it a piece of Gemara and I asked it to give me 10 questions. And it generated questions for me with the answer key. Now, I didn't check this, by the way. Some of the answers might be wrong, but it's certainly a really powerful starting point. Right? Yes?
A lot of this language-based, anything related to math,
Yeah. There is some stuff. Let me see if I have a sample here. I was just talking to some people before the class about So these are, because these are things that are meant to be prepared in advance rather than stuff that's used in the class, these are mostly language-based. There's, in the second session where I talk about chat bots that you're going to use with your students, there's a few that specifically tutor math and talk about math. But just to see here, so this is all free, to address that other question. This is Magic School, and you can see here all of the different kinds of things that it will do for you automatically, create with AI, and allow you to then edit. There's that. How much time do I have? I have like negative 5 minutes. Yeah, okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Is there such thing as an AI that we could use in place of the classroom app that like does monitoring for us?
That's an interesting question. I haven't seen one. But, all right. I'm just going to, because we're running out of time, I want to make sure that I mention a couple of things. So CuraPod, I showed last year, it will do what we've talked about here and create an interactive slideshow presentation on your topic, one that's fully editable and includes interactive pieces. So if your students have devices, you're showing a slideshow that will appear on their devices, and they'll interact, like they'll answer questions, and you'll see the answers and stuff like that. You can import slides from somewhere else and then have it add slides, or you can export those slides to somewhere else if you want. If you use slideshows at all in your classroom, it's definitely something you should look at. We're running out of time here, so I want to make sure to touch on just a couple of more pieces here. First of all, besides creating stuff from scratch, you can also have it refine things. Let's say you have something that you wrote once before. You can give it to it and say, here's my presentation. I want a story arc here. Tell me what I need to do to improve the story arc of this presentation. Right? Or here's my presentation. I need additional information on this. How would you add that to it? Right? This should be... Think of the AI as a collaborator with you that you can talk to and help, and it will help you generate whatever you want. Even ideas. I need an idea. Give me some ideas for what might be a hook for this topic, right? What are some, here you go, I need to teach slopes. What are some things that might be interesting to my sixth grade students about slopes that I could use as a hook? For any of the administrators in the room who have computers in the building at all and are looking at filtering and are frustrated by the limitations of that filtering, and this is sort of related to your question, there is now an AI that does filtering on the devices, which means early indications from schools that are testing it indicate that means that a lot of the normal ways of getting around the filtering don't work because the filter is on the device and isn't looking at the URL against the list. It's looking for specific criteria, and it will blur the image or stop the site or whatever based on the criteria that you give it and report to you and whatever. And, okay, so now what I'm going to do is let's just see if this worked. I'm going to stop the recording, which is 58 minutes, and hopefully I'll be able to upload this recording.
Let us go to the website for
that. Yeah. Oh, thank you. This is the same QR code, and this is the opening screen for the next one, but it's the same QR code, so...
I actually meant the interface for the note-taking.
The interface... For the... Oh, so that's, yeah, oh. Right, okay. So this, the one that I used for this is called Fireflies, fireflies.ai. And the reason I'm using it is it's one of the few that has a... has a tool for live meetings. A lot of them do not. Okay, while this is uploading, any questions? Yeah?
Okay, why do I use CuraPod as opposed to Nearpod or Pear
Deck? Oh, because CuraPod will create the presentation for you.
Tell me more. What is that? What do you mean?
Here, I'll show you. Full lesson. Now, it does, there are a bunch of AIs here, a bunch of tools that will produce, like, specific types of things, but this is the most dramatic, so I'll just show you this one. So I want to create a math presentation about slopes for 6th grade. 7th grade? All right, 7th grade. Do magic.
It will build the content for you. That's the difference between
yeah.
this and the others.
Right, and
it's all editable.
Yeah, it's all editable. It does a, yeah. I mean, and you can also give it, so if you just like tell it, like, do it on, you know, whatever, it will pull the info from the vast web, so it's probably not, right. But if you give, but you can give it the text also and tell it to create based on that text, and then it does a really decent job.
Has AI made sites like Grammarly obsolete?
Grammarly uses AI.
Oh.
But to some degree, I mean, ChatGPT, oh, yeah, actually, once you mentioned Grammarly, I should point out, for those of you who are trying to catch students and are using AI detection, So Olivia, here's your slopes made simple.
I think we gotta rock and roll to our next one.
Yeah.
I kind of want to stay here.